Running a call center sales team is definitely filled with challenges, but at the same time, can be very rewarding. There is no manual for how to win the call center sales game, which is why this podcast exists. As your guide, our goal is to help you overcome challenges, discover new tools, innovate where possible, and hear stories from others who have made it to the top of the call center mountain. Welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast with your host, Jason Cutter.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast. Super excited for my guest today. This is going to be a little different for the Scalable Call Center Sales Show, but it will be similar to what I did before with my other podcast, The Authentic Persuasion Show, because I have as my guest today, Doug C. Brown. He is the CEO of Business Success Factors. And here's what's going to make this fun and a little bit different than normal is he is an international best-selling author of the book, Win-Win Selling, Unlock Your Power for Profitability by Resolving Objections. And he is a nationally recognized sales revenue growth expert and consultant. So he is like me, but doing it in different ways, best-selling book. And so it's going to be fun. He's also a podcast host. I had the pleasure of being on his show. It's the CEO Sales Strategies Podcast. And we'll talk a bunch about that, what he's learned, what he's got from the book, his perspective, what he sees from his side of sales and consulting and speaking and whatnot. So this should be fun, especially focused on the call center leaders, sales managers, and owners listening. Doug C. Brown, welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks for having me here. I'm really grateful to be here.
Yeah. So when we first connected, I thought this was going to be really fun, which is let me talk on your show, have you on my show, kind of trade war stories, trade what's working, what's not working, what we're seeing, you know, and this is now your chance to come on and shine it and do most of the talking, which you gave me the privilege of doing before. Let's talk, you know, obviously this show is for people in the call center industry. Call center is a blanket term. A lot of people kind of get confused in their head, or they kind of pigeonhole in one way. Really anything with inside telephone sales, B2C, B2B, doesn't matter. It's more focused on that with a sales operation focus. That's the scalable part. Mm-hmm. What kind of lessons have you seen either from hosting the podcast you do, which is talking to CEOs and top leaders, or what you're seeing from your time in the industry and consulting, where the companies that are doing it really well, what are they doing when they're building, let's say, scalable sales operations?
Yeah, I think they look at, you know, the whole customer journey. Because a lot of times, it's funny bringing this up because I just got somebody who was interested in having my help. And he's like, hey, I'm running a campaign and I need a team. And we want to start it tomorrow. And for the last 60 days, I've been sending this person messages like, look, if you want to do this right, we need to actually put structure into this. It can't, you know, if you want a fly by night thing, right, that's fine. And, you know, they're getting a sub 10% conversion rate right now. And it's like, Okay, there's a reason for that. Huh. Right. Yeah. So, you know, I just did a campaign with a client of ours, and you know, we got from start to beginning, we had a 71% close rate across the board, right? So people are like, "Wow, how are you doing that?" Well, there's a process to it, and part of it is we must look at the whole customer journey. So a lot of companies will think marketing, PR, sales, operations, customer service, you know, human resources, whatever. They're all fragmented parts of, you know, the company per se, right? But the reality is anyone who's interfacing in any capacity, whether it's personally live, virtually, social media, whatever, they're all part of the customer journey. So if people integrate that, then they'll have a much higher conversion rate just by doing that, because, you know, it's consistency all the way through. Right. It's that's what I see a big mistake that companies are making, not doing that, especially now with the post pandemic. Well, hopefully post pandemic, sort of in the middle pandemic to post pandemic, I hope. Because a lot of things have shifted from face-to-face meetings to virtual. So, you know, so sometimes they don't even get a chance. They see a marketing piece or whatever, they respond to it. They don't have a chance. But, you know, whether it's short-term or complex sales, that's the big part that I see that's missing on how to connect on the customer journey on a human-to-human conversational basis so that people actually feel valued versus, hey, I'm being sold to.
Makes sense. And any longtime listeners of this show or anything that I put out, that's a constant conversation that I have either with guests or message I'm talking about, which is those silos that cause those issues. And it's interesting hearing you talking about the customer journey and all of those departments. And fundamentally, the customer doesn't care. Customer doesn't care if it's marketing's KPIs and sales KPIs. They want it to be one experience that solves their problem or helps them achieve something. That's interesting too, about what you said with the company who worked on, discussed for 60 days, sent them information, trying to do it right. On that note, just on a side note, why do you think, or what's been your experience with why a company wouldn't have done it over the past 60 days, is now calling you and saying, we want to do this tomorrow. We finally decided. What is getting in their way of seeing it as an operation that should be built?
I think one part of that is they're not really sure. I don't want to use the word ignorance, right? Because that's not really a good word, but it's really one of those things that they just don't understand the process in which it takes to set up these high conversions. So the high percentage conversions. And a lot of times too, you know, it's not just this client. I mean, I've had, you know, numerous ones. I had one that was in the biotech field. You know, he wants to fire his whole sales team and hire them all new overnight. Right. And then I had another one in the training space that wanted to do the same thing. And so I asked the question, like, why do you, you know, what gets you to this point where you're just so frustrated? And so what I find is not, it's just they don't understand. They don't understand the conversion mechanisms of running it through the whole client journey, number one. And number two, they're looking at salespeople in their operations many times as the same as somebody who would be in a different position, an operations position, any other part of the company, right? And salespeople in general are slightly different. I think you and I would both agree to this. We're slightly different people. Yep. And we like to communicate just like human beings do, but we're different. And that if people don't recognize that they are different and they need to be managed differently, then they'll get frustrated with that process. Or they'll do something like, hey, you know what? Get seasoned salespeople in there. They'll convert like crazy, you know, but they still don't need onboarding. They still don't need training. They still don't need to understand operations of the customer journey because they know how to sell.
Right.
Right. And the truth is they know how to sell. The challenge is when clients are now going to come back or potential buyers are going to come back and say, what about this operational process? How does this work in finance? How does, you know, and all those questions that they had just like never were trained on. So now all of a sudden, they're not really sure how to answer them. So they'll do their best. But you know, there's only so many times you can say, geez, I don't know that. I'll get back to you.
Or just make up an answer and hope the deal goes through and hope that it doesn't come back your way at some point later as your fault when they're super unhappy. Right.
And you and I both know that will be most of the time, right? Because the nature of a salesperson is to close the sale.
Right.
Right.
And when they're undermanaged and over incentivized in one direction only, you're going to get what you're going to get because that's what you're paying for, which is a closed deal. How much of this is, let's say, somebody who is sales focused, somebody who leans towards sales, understands sales, was in sales themselves, was really good at it, move into a leadership role, move into an entrepreneurial role and run a company, and they go back. They go by the classic model of, if I just hire 10 people, even if three of them work out, that's great. I'll just fire the other seven. And if I just keep doing that every week or every month, I'll build a really amazing team that knows what to do without any adult supervision.
Right. That's another common thing. But what they're not looking at is what does that 7-person fallout really cost them, right? So let's say that's on average 150% of base salary, you know, between lost clients, lost goodwill, clients that would have been sold, not sold, you know, and all the havoc it really wreaks in the company, right? So if we're hiring 10, then we're losing 7. That means we're losing 70% of that. So now we've got a loss.
Yeah.
So now if we hire another 7 and they even work out, they've still got to sell 3 to 5 times what the 7 has lost in order to break even, right? So I guess it depends on what the company's looking for, whether they're looking for just straight revenue growth or they're looking for high profitability with revenue growth. And So I think, you know, that would be a consideration for sure. But again, you know, how does it affect your clients? Not only day one, but how does it affect your referral ratio? How does it affect the people working in the company? Does, you know, your sales engineer, if you had one, for example, get so upset that she or he leaves? Does your operations people go, I'm not doing this because I'm not interfacing with these people or whatever? There's a lot of other factors in a company that if they don't really look at all the aspects, and it's not that hard to do that. It doesn't take that much time. But if they don't look at the aspects of that, you know, and the other question would be, why do we have to fire 7, right? What wasn't there that allowed 2 or 3 of them to actually be successful at the company? Was it the initial hiring process? Was it the you know, a lot of companies don't realize there's a difference between onboarding and sales onboarding. Right. So it just depends.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting what you're talking about and super important about the overall effect of losing a rep, whether you fire them or they quit, they're underperforming. Like there's the cost of the recruiting and those stats. But then in sales, there's the lost revenue. What are they not closing they could have? And in particular, not just not closing that they could have, but not closing that if you had given those leads to a different rep, that rep would have closed, right? And it's like this painful number when you really dive into it. And again, like you're talking about, there's difference with onboarding. It's like, why did you have to fire 7 reps? Like what's missing in the process? Unfortunately, those questions, which make sense to you and I, and the people who have built sales operations and the owners who are listening to this, those questions just fall on deaf ears with the other people running these centers, like you're talking about, where they don't understand it and they don't think that's the issue. And they're just going by the classic model with just a ton of carnage. And here's the other unfortunate thing too, is your customers aren't going to tolerate it, right? It's now in an era where your customer is not going to tolerate your bad salesperson for very long in the phone calls, or conversations or meetings. They're going to go to the other 10 companies that do exactly what you do. And despite what every company thinks, they're not the only snowflake out there. And so then they're going to go to that and they might even rip your reputation online, making it even worse for you. And obviously you see that. So let's say they're building a sales process, right? And somebody listening to this goes, okay, I got it, guys. I need to build a sales process. I need to put some things in place. And so far, what I've done is I have a comp plan and I pay them for closed deals and I give them some leads and I hope they know what they're doing and I want to move them forward. I want to change up that process. There's onboarding, there's training. It's all kinds of things we're talking about. Where do you see the right level of accountability fit in with probably what you see missing a lot, and what can a company do to fix that?
So the first thing about accountability is, do we have a system that's proactively doing it or is it reactive? So I have a client right now that they're using Salesforce.com and they think that's their accountability. And I'm looking at what's going on and I'm going, there's no proactive reports explaining X, Y, A, B, Z, right? And so when I talk to the sales team, it's like, oh yeah, no, we're not doing that, right? So it's like, oh, well, why? Well, you know, we've just never been asked, right? So there's no accountability in the proactive side of it. So it's kind of like when we talk about referrals, right? Does a company actually have a proactive referral program or a reactive referral program? So this proactive reactive thing, and you know, to give credit to, you know, companies that, you know, are doing this, you know, you and I can look at it from the outside point of view and go, okay, that's pretty obvious we're missing. But, you know, if it's kind of like, you know, I love hockey and I was watching a hockey game last night and they brought the cameras down to ice level to follow around the players for a little bit. Right. And I'm like, there's no way I would have reacted in that time. That guy would have just pasted me against the boards and I probably wouldn't even be talking to you right now. Right. Because it moves that fast. Well, and sales to me is real time. So that moves, it moves that fast as well. So again, stepping back and saying, okay, let's do an assessment on what's there. And then let's take that assessment based on what we want as an end goal for the company. And as important, equally as important for the client, what is their expectation? What do they deem to be value-based, whether it's professional return on the investment or personal return on the investment? And then let's construct the process through there. And as we're doing that, now let's fill in the accountability gaps throughout that whole process. And, you know, that way it's like, okay, did this happen? You know, we had a first meeting. What follow-up went out? How do we measure this follow-up? Did that follow-up result in a next meeting? What happened in the next meeting? What, you know, did we ask for referrals? How did we ask for referrals? All of those things can be measured. And it's interesting to me, Jason, when that, you know, and you and I have talked about this, I think on the previous conversation we had on my podcast, you know, when we measure these things, amazing things turn up, right? You find these amazing things that just people like they didn't even think about. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, let's optimize that point. And then you optimize that point, you get a little three bump, you know, three and a half, 4% bump in sales, let's say. And so it's not, you know, to give people credit, you know, it's real time. So they're in it every single day. And it's really easy for people to sit, you know, sit on the outside and go, well, if I was there, I would have done this differently. Sure. But in my case, you know, a lot of times, you know, I'm looking at it from a fresh set of eyes. So it's a lot easier to spot the dots on the wall versus, you know, just walking in and seeing the wall every day.
Yeah. And I think there's always that balance with the Monday morning quarter, you know, armchair quarterback looking at it and say, well, this is what I would have done, but you weren't in the game. So it's really easy for you to say that versus what you're saying is that outside perspective, which is, you know, in no way a subtle plug for people like you and I and people that provide what we do, you know, using this as a spot for that, which is coming from the outside, you're going to see, you know, the whole picture and see where those little things are that everyone else just has kind of glossed over. You're just not paying attention to, or just too busy to really look at it. And I think what's interesting too, when I hear you talk about the accountability and the reports and the metrics and all of those things, one important note that I pick up from what you're talking about, there's the, you know, what gets measured gets managed, and most people are going to be aware with that philosophy. But the other side of that coin is that if you're going to hold people accountable or an operation accountable to a metric, to a KPI, you have to be able to report on it. And if as much possible, report on it automatically, that doesn't require human intervention, right? Like if your reps have to do something to then update the CRM so that you can report and hold them accountable, that's doomed to fail because humans are humans. Not even talking about salespeople as
right.
CRM users. I'm talking about humans. Like nobody's perfect. And so you have to automate that as much as possible. If you want to hold the system or the people or anybody accountable, you have to have the numbers. Because I see a lot of companies that say, we're going to hold everyone to this standard. Okay, how are you going to track it? Oh, well, I don't know. It's like, okay, well, then it's not going to work, right? Like you have to be able to do that. And where are you seeing that fit into like the sales manager part? Because I think one of the interesting things that I see is from a philosophical standpoint, like we were talking about earlier with the process in general, is that salespeople don't necessarily like lots of accountability. And sales managers used to be salespeople and they didn't like lots of accountability. And now they've got to roll out that. And so what can a owner business leader do to help foster some increased accountability, which feels like, you know, big brother at times?
Well, and it is at times, right? But, you know, we all need that. I remember I had a personal trainer and I was 5 minutes late to arrive to the gym. And he was calling me going, hey, why are you 5 minutes late? Right? are you not taking this seriously? Right? And I was like, I'm kind of stuck in traffic. He's like, next time leave earlier.
Yeah.
And that was the guy that I got the most results from, because a manager's job is not just to manage the team. The manager's job is to coach people to excellence and to help them increase their closing percentages and their ability to get into more accounts. So what I find a lot of times on the management side is they're really good when they're good at managing the operational side of the actual sales process.
Okay.
But they forget that they're dealing with, as you said, human beings. And quite frankly, I can hear all these salespeople out there now going to yell at me. Quite frankly, measuring mavericks and prima donnas, you know, and by the way, guys, I'm one of you. So, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, we don't want to be held to accountability that's going to slow us down. We want to have, you know, get in, do our job, sell, get our recognition, collect our money, go on to the next thing. That's really what most salespeople want. But I really see the company not having because you said the key word. I think you said something like you can manage it, report on it, manage it, but not take accountability for it. And so, you know, what do you do with the rep who is, you know, not making it at this point? Right. So how do you hold that rep accountable? How do you hold anybody in the company accountable for the standard that one wants set? And I'll go right back to the customer journey again. You know, you can have a sloppy rep in the company, but if you're getting 100% people saying, I love this place, I referred 10 people to this place, right? Go sloppy. You know what I mean? Like, don't change it, because the reality is it's deemed at the end of the day, you know, by the clientele that whether they want to do business with you or not. And I think you made a very solid reference to this earlier, not, you know, that you're not the only snowflake, right? There's lots of snowflakes in the world now. And with everything going online, it's easier for people to access information and the availability to purchase things, you know, many times without even having a rep to talk to. I mean, you can go buy a brand new car today. You don't even talk to anybody.
No, buy it, right? From a vending machine through an app on your phone and have it delivered.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, you know, so that almost makes the sales channel obsolete at that point, which goes back to what I think Peter Drucker was saying years and years and years ago, which is, you know, marketing's job is to make sales superfluous, so that it's really not needed. Now, I don't agree with Mr. Drucker. I think marketing's job is to make it so that salespeople are now set up to have high closing ratios, not to get rid of the sales team. Because the reality is that no matter how great the marketing is, most times, especially in a complex sale, there's multiple decision makers and they need to talk with people. It's that simple. So how do we take that whole customer journey and give them what they want on the back end? Yeah. And then, you know, it's win-win. They win, we win.
So it's interesting. You're talking about that Peter Drucker, and I wonder how long ago that was. I can totally understand that quote, you know, and what he's saying about, you know, marketing, if it's so effective, you don't need salespeople. And I think that really goes into what I actually wanted to talk about here, you know, with this last part of our time together. But, you know, when you look at salespeople, or the world looks at salesperson people as that person who wants a commission or needs a deal for whatever their job, the money, and they are playing the role of sharing facts and figures and features and benefits and lecturing and monologuing and pushing and manipulating or tricking or whatever, you know, all the classic mode is. Then yeah, if you do enough marketing, you do it well, then people have all the data to make a decision. They don't need this person that may or may not be trustworthy to help them make a decision. What's changed though, I think since then, is the role of real professional salespeople, like what you're talking about, which is it's no longer their job to just spew out lots of information. It's their job to actually help somebody and guide them to the right decision, because everyone has within arm's reach 24 hours a day, all the world's information. So based on that, which is an awesome segue, if we're talking about this pandemic situation, what we're going through, it's been, you know, approaching 2 years now as we're recording this, based on, depending on where you live in the world and when it started affecting you. What do you see companies and salespeople still needing to do at this point, which may or may not be the same advice that was given, you know, a year and a half ago or a year ago, but what do you see them needing to do? This is two parts. You run as long as you want with this in the salespeople and their process and their conversations and their act. And then from a business perspective, their systems, the processes and the activities.
Okay. And I think I'll add one part to that, you know, for a company, firstly, to recognize that everyone is a salesperson. Everyone. And I'll give an example, and then I'll go back to that, the business and what individuals need to do. So this is a real life example. It happened just 3 days ago. And then, so my company, we lease vehicles, and we happen to be leasing with Nissan, if you're listening to this. And our leases are coming up at the end of April. So we're in January. And we were having a challenge with one of the vehicles. The backup camera was not working really well. Well, I'll condense the story, but here's the deal. It was 4 days at the dealership and they didn't fix the thing. Then they come back and say, oh, we can't do this because the camera's not under warranty. And this vehicle has, I think, 19 or 20,000 miles on it. Right. So I'm talking with the top of the service department going, listen, does this make sense to you? You know, you're now coming back telling me you got to charge me for parts on a vehicle that's under warranty. I don't get it. Right. So we go back and forth. I said, look, let me speak to your general manager or let me speak to the owner of the dealership. And oh, no, not available, not available, not available. It's like, really? Listen, I have three new vehicles that I'm turning in 3 months. They're either with you or someone else. Oh, I'll get back to you. Never gets back to us. Get another person to get involved. Never gets back to her, right? Constantly. So I call the sales channel because, you know, we're sales guys. I call the sales channel. And I go, hey, do you want to earn three commissions at one time? And the lady goes, yeah. I said, well, let me tell you what's going on. I tell her, she goes, that's wrong. I said, of course it's wrong. I brought it to other dealerships. By the way, I know what the problem with this camera. It needs to have a software update. The last three times we brought it, same problem, right? So she goes to the service department, talks to the service department. The service manager says, well, I've been talking to the technicians. He's been telling me this. And she's like, well, guy wants to buy three cars, right? Anyways, she comes back. She goes, I can't get anywhere with the service department. I said, can I speak to the general manager of the owner of the dealership? Well, they're not available. Well, what can you do for me? I don't know if there's anything I can do for you, right? But I'll call you back. 4 hours go by, no phone call. We call back. She's not available. Talk to the lady at the front desk and we go, can we talk to another salesperson? Sorry, everybody's busy, right? So we went and picked the vehicle up today and we took the vehicle back. There's no way they're getting in my business.
Yeah,
it's just not going to happen. And we're definitely going to do this again. And so I can hear people with Nissan right now going, oh my God, call this guy, right? So the reality is, you know, we could buy 5-6 vehicles in a year off a dealership. Now, we're not a huge customer, but it's better than selling onesie, twosie, threesie, you know, to right? So here's my point. The whole company is selling. So customer service, a lot of times, for example, they look at customer service as a needed asset to sort of take care of problems. But what if we took customer service and turned it into a sales generating machine? Right, where they're generating referrals, they're generating new sales, they're generating repeat business, and they're getting paid on it, right? Or they're generating it and doing a setting role and bringing it back to the sales team to close it, so both of them get paid on it. Now, what's the best client experience? So it's all the way through, as we talked about originally. So what do individuals need to do more of? They need to understand that they're dealing with human beings who have choices. As you said before, you know, vending machines. I could go to Carvana and get in three new vehicles, right? I can go to, you know, autos, whatever it is, you know, and it just in the click of a few mouse strokes, buy a vehicle. I can lease a vehicle that way. I can do it on the website of the manufacturer. I don't need to touch the dealer. Nope. So it has to come back to this human to human understanding of what does the client or potential buyer value. And I see a lot of people in sales not understanding how to sell on value. They're trying to do what you said, feature, benefit, you know, and all of that type of thing, right? But it's the value. There's two parts of value. There's a professional ROI on value, i.e., hey, I just got a great deal on three vehicles. I saved myself, you know, $8,000, and I can allocate that $8,000 now to some marketing expense because I'm a small company type thing, right? That's ROI. Right. But this is also personal. Hey, I just got this car of my dreams. I'm proud to drive it around. People are saying, wow, look at your new car, right? So I have a status that's going on, right? So that's a personal ROI. But too many times people don't understand. They always try to sell a professional ROI. They forget the personal ROI. And that could be a lot of things, right? I mean, that could be higher repute. It could be more better client satisfaction. It could be better internal employee satisfaction, happier employees, you know, all of this stuff that lead to some type of emotion that somebody's anchored to. You know, it could be like, hey, listen, I get to go home and tell my, you know, my spouse, listen, you know what? I just made 20% more this month than I made last month because I'm, you know, whatever it might be for that person. Right? That turns into that relationship. So the individuals have really got to understand that they're dealing with people and that people have wants, needs, desires, fears, et cetera. And it's not just like turning the numbers, even though numbers are important in sales, because more than ever, people have, and quite frankly, people can find out about your products or service and know more about it than you do by just looking online and going, I mean, there's specialized websites for industries where you could go in and you can find out exactly what you're looking for. So that would be the first thing. Now, the business itself has to train their people in this capacity, right? And they have to hold them accountable. Here's the problem with a lot of training. People come in, they'll get some training, they'll get a little bump in skill set, then they leave and they retain a little bit of it. But most of it just reverts back to their own natural buyer's bias. And so if a company's going to invest in training, they want to invest in training to train their people on the things that they want based on the customer journey, but they have to have accountability to that process. Like when I was running, you know, large sales teams, I would, you know, large being the largest one I was running was, couple hundred people, you know, 166 people. And I had one that was a little bigger than that, a little over 200 people. I would call the sales rep up in the middle of the day and I'd say, you know, page 14 on the SOP based on this, blah, 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 blah. It says this, what's the next word? And they'd be like, what? I'd be like, listen, we're tying your performance bonus to these things. So if you can't tell me the next time, kiss your bonus away. They'd be like, hey, you're kind of hard. I'm like, am I? Because when the client asks you the same thing and you can't answer it and you lose that sale, who loses? The company, yes. But who else loses individually? Oh, I do. Okay, so am I being a jerk? And by the way, I took this from the military when I was in the military. They used to bring us out in the middle of the morning, or cold, rain, sleet, hail, it didn't matter, right? And they would say, strip down your weapon and put it back together. No flashlights. And we'd be like, in the beginning, we'd be like, how the heck are we going to pull this off, right? But by the end, we could do it in our sleep. And why do you need to know that? Because if you're in a real fight situation and your weapon jams and you don't know how to clear it or you don't know how to fix it, that could be severe consequences. So I would constantly go through and spot check people. When I had live presenters, I would call them up and I'd go, hey, this section here in the PowerPoint, here's the line. What's the response? What's the next line after, right? On the third slide, the 18th word on the second, you know, the second paragraph has, you know, between the first and the second, it's 18 words. On the 14th word, what is it? And I would call people up and they would go, I don't know. But after they started understanding that I wasn't going to let go, Jason, yeah. I'd call up and I go, hey, second paragraph. And they go, here's the whole paragraph. Blah, 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 boom. And we were done. Right. And I'd say, well, what does that mean to the client? It means this. And what is the client looking for? The client's looking for X, Y, and Z. And so it'd be like, okay, so now I've trained them to be in any situation whatsoever. Well, you know, I took a, I won't say the person's name, but they're very kind of semi-famous in the world. I'll say his name, Tony Robbins. And Tony had a business divisions with a man named Chet Holmes. And I was their president of training and sales. And when I got there, they had a 17.8% conversion. 6 months later, they had a 43.2% conversion. Just by doing what I'm just saying I did now, I held everybody accountable to the process. And that's what companies need to do. They need to have the ability to hire their managers or whatever. And you mentioned something really kind of dear to my heart. A lot of times they take their best salesperson and they throw them in as a manager. So most of the time they're ruining two positions at one time.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's different profiles for a manager and different profiles for a salesperson. And usually a top performing salesperson can be an okay manager, but they're not a great manager because they don't like spreadsheets. They don't like accountability. They don't like all that stuff that comes along with it. So, you know, but they want to hold their management accountable, and the managers need to hold their team accountable, and the company needs to hold the manager accountable for the team, not just by the numbers, but by all the attributes that they deem as those KPIs that they're looking for.
I love it. I think all that stuff is important. I can see the effectiveness long-term and the terror short-term of your exercise of calling up people and then quizzing them on the spot. But obviously, you know, using the military as an example, right? It's, you know, one of their mottos too is practice like you fight, right? Like it's,
right.
It's you just have practice over here. And then when you get into a war situation or a fight, and then hopefully you'll know how to convert that and you'll know how to do it. It's like, you've got to know how to do it cold anyway and know how you're going to react. And I think that's so important because that kind of goes against what we talked about a bit in the beginning, which is, you know, the salesperson who just wants to show up and do what they do and have conversations. And generally the salesperson, you know, person that gravitates towards sales doesn't fit in other areas, and they like sales because it doesn't have the same structure and they can do what has gotten them through life to that point successfully. And then they can just keep doing it. And then now you're talking about the structure and this process. And of course, anyone knows me knows that I love what you said about remembering you're dealing with a human and dealing with that person and caring about them. And then lastly, before we wrap up, your Nissan story cracks me up. And then it's also interesting thing, because one of the things that I think when I hear that story is that all in my own customer life as a consumer, all I need to know about a company from the top down with their core values, their company culture, how they train people, what they think about their employees will be reflected in the customer experience. And what I can tell you is that dealership doesn't care. Like either they think they don't need your business, or they're too good for it, or they don't need your inventory, or they know they're just going to flip it and make a bunch of money. So they'd like your lease returns back and they really don't care about you because they don't have enough cars to sell anyway, or they just don't care. And they don't realize that you literally will do what a friend of mine did, because he cannot stand the car buying experience because you don't know what you're going to get. He ordered one of those vending machine cars and had it delivered on a flatbed truck and never talked to a single person as a signal of how unpleasant that buyer's journey is. So, you know, I think that's the thing. I think for a lot of companies, if you're unsure, look at, like you said, from the very beginning, what is the customer experience? What are they telling you about you? And if you're ever interested or curious about it, either mystery shop, secret shop your own company, or pay someone to mystery shop, secret shop your company, and then listen to what they say. And then that will tell you what, you know, what you're doing well and where you could be losing.
I can't remember the name of the show, but there's a show that actually does that, right? They make over their CEO or the founder of the company.
Yep.
And they send them
Undercover Boss.
Oh, that's what it is. Undercover Boss.
All these other spinoffs. Yeah.
Yeah. Undercover Boss. And when I watched that show, it never ceases to amaze me that most of the time the CEO or the owner or, you know, founder of the company is in tears at the end of that, thinking, oh my gosh, I didn't know all this stuff. Right.
Yeah.
So it never hurts to have a guy like yourself go into a company and just take a look, right? It doesn't cost that much money to do that, but the information that they can pull out. And I think a lot of companies don't do this because they'll manage by the top line numbers. And I think that's what you're saying about the Nissan company. You know, I just had an experience with Hilton hotels, which I'm a Diamond member in Hilton, right? Because I used to travel a lot and still do. I'm still a Diamond member, but they changed their policy on breakfast. And so it used to be I could go and get breakfast for two. And it was just guaranteed because you're a Diamond member. That's what you get, right? And sometimes I could go and take my kids with me and I'd get breakfast for four because that was kind of the policy of most of the hotels. Now, when they change the breakfast thing, they give you a voucher and it ranges from $20 to $24 a day, depending on the hotel. And you've got to use the voucher, but you can use it for dinner. You can use it for breakfast. But here's the deal. I went to 11 different stays just recently in, say, the last 3 months. Eight of the 11 had a different policy on how they use that money. In other words, one of them said, you've got to use it the day you actually check in. And I said, it's 9 o'clock at night. What am I going to do? I'm not going to go get, you know, loaded at the bar. I'm allergic to alcohol. I don't even drink, right? I'm not going to eat a heavy meal at 10 o'clock at night, right?
Right.
I'm 59 years old. Maybe when I was 20, that would work, but this doesn't work anymore. So it's, so we ended up not using that. Another one had a policy where you could use it for lunch or breakfast, but not for dinner. Right. So it's all like all these shifting things. And I'm saying to myself, man, when this pandemic ends, I do live events. I might have 150 business owners coming to a hotel. I'm not going to have them all upset over a breakfast policy. Right. So Hilton is off my list. I've already started talking to Hyatt, Marriott. Right. And I was a Diamond member for 5 years with Hilton. So again, this customer journey, but I think, you know, and when I call into Hilton's Diamond line, they're like, hey, it depends on the hotel. They make their own rules. So I'm like, do you understand there's chaos going on? Right. I can't be the only one. So it's one of those things that, you know, maybe corporate is looking at, hey, we're still profitable and we want to be profitable and whatever somebody's experience doesn't really matter. But when they'll care is, you know, when like some of the phone companies had to start caring, right? When all this competition and deregulation came in. Right. So we'll see what happens with that. But any business owner, if they would just pay attention to the lessons that we're talking here and play the long game versus the short game, I think they'll fare much better and start optimizing parts of their business, you know, dissecting the parts of the business and optimizing them better than just looking at the overall top line number, because the profitability is much higher.
Yeah. And I think that's the issue that leads to it is they're looking at the top line number and they have a very difficult time giving attribution stats and lost revenue to the customers who aren't happy and go away quietly and never come back because they don't know about it. Like your story, right? Like Hilton might not ever know that you're not going to do events there. They just won't see that event revenue, but they'll figure it out. And they're a big company, so they don't know what they're missing. They don't know what they've lost. So
yeah. And I'm on a podcast talking to you, which has, you know, lots of listeners, right? So, you know, if they find any credibility in me, they might start questioning, hey, yeah, maybe I should start looking around too. I'm a, you know, whatever. Or I'm a Diamond member. I went through that same thing. How dare they, you know? And all of a sudden the chain reaction. I think the stats were like, you know, a satisfied client, you know, might tell one person, but a dissatisfied client will tell a minimum of 12.
For sure. Well, and then the speed of the internet just accelerates that. And I think a lot of companies are still stuck like with their sales mode and thinking what salespeople should be saying or doing. Also how their business is not affected because they don't think about that with the internet. So, well, thank you, Doug, for coming here. This is super fun. A lot of it is validating what I think and I see, but I love hearing it from a different perspective, more experience, you having done this with a different range of companies than myself. And I love just more we can get this message out to help companies shift what they're doing for the company's sake, for their customer's sake, for their employees' sake. I think that's great. I know for people who want to follow up with you, they want to find out more about what you're doing or connect with you. I know that your website for people, and this is all going to be in the show notes, but they can go to businesssuccessfactors.com. You're also active on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. They can find you. When in doubt, search Doug C. Brown. I know that's the best way to find you of all the sea of Doug Brown. So Doug, thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for sharing all this and your time. And I appreciate it. I know there was some great stuff in here for the audience.
I appreciate it, Jason. I really do. And you're a great interviewer. So thank you.
Thanks, Doug. And that's it for this episode. We'll catch you on the next conversation for the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast. Thanks, everybody.
Did you get some inspirations of ways to help your call center sales team win bigger, stronger, and faster? Hope you are fired up to scale your sales operations. If you got value from this podcast, please go in and leave a rating and review. Also, make sure to forward this episode to anyone else you know in the call center space. We appreciate your support in growing the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast family. And if you have any comments, ideas, or feedback, contact us at cutterconsultinggroup.com.